This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Everything Evolves, the world's only podcast devoted exclusively to Evolve Wrestling. We are your hosts. I'm Aaron Bentley. I'm joined by Aaron Taub. When our powers combine, we are the Wrong Boys. I want to make sure everyone, if it's the first time that you're listening to Everything Evolves, that you're following us on Twitter. We are at Evolve Pod, where you can find me at Aaron Like the Car, or Aaron Taub at AP Taub. But I have a little treat for you this time, friends. We are joined for the first time by a special guest, the king of banter, public enemy number one of the wrestling left, Joe Lanza. Joe, how are you?
That's a pretty aggressive introduction. I like that, though. You've got a lot of energy, Bentley Aaron. I like that. I don't necessarily appreciate, you know, the enemy of the wrestling left, Joe Lanza. I mean, it's already hard enough to get over with these people, and you're just burying me from the start, but that's all right.
Well, I wanted to set up a good face heel dynamic at the beginning of the show, so we'll see, you know, how you shine as we move forward.
Hold on a second. How are the communists a babyface all of a sudden? This doesn't make sense to me. I'm just a real American, you know. I'm a nice guy, solid middle class wage, just paying his bills, you know. And you guys are the communists. So how am I to heal in this situation?
You're on our turf, Lanza. In this part of the world, we are the baby faces.
What is this, Leningrad? I mean, what do you mean your turf? you're in Kentucky. You know, come on, give me a break over here. But listen, you want me to be the bad guy, I'll be the bad guy, you know.
Well, yeah, what do you think is more real America? Bumblefuck Kentucky or bumblefuck Texas?
That's true. It's neck and neck for sure.
It's definitely not Queens, New York.
Definitely not. Well, Queens, New York is kind of a little more cosmopolitan, a lot of different cultures here. So, you know, yeah. I understand if it's not like real America, you know what I mean? Like people from other countries would want to come here to visit.
I thought this thing was going to open up with Nikolai Volkov and Boris Zhukov singing the Soviet national anthem.
We'll put that in post.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got Joe here, but I do think that before we got started, since this is our first time we've had a guest, if you're going to come on Everything Evolves, you have to join the family first. And AT has prepared something, Joe, that we need you to do before we can really get going on this podcast.
Is it some kind of oath to the Communist Manifesto? Because I'm just going to have to hang up.
No.
It's an oath. Just, you know, this is an Evolve Wrestling podcast.
Okay.
We would never want any of our listeners to betray Evolve Wrestling or to do anything, you know, that would speak poorly about the brand that we all love. So, I'll start it off. You can repeat after me. Does that work for you?
I feel like I'm being set up, but listen, I'm a good sport. Let's do it.
All right. I, Joe Lanza. Solemnly swear.
Solemnly swear.
That I will never betray Evolve Wrestling.
Jesus. That I will never betray Evolve Wrestling.
I pledge my undying loyalty.
I pledge my undying loyalty.
To Gabe Sapolsky.
Killing me. To Gabe Sapolsky.
Sal Hamway.
I knew it was coming. Sal Hamway.
And the entire World Wrestling Network empire.
And the entire World Wrestling Network empire.
And further.
What is this, a half hour? And further.
I openly declare. That my ends can be attained only.
Oh, oh, oh boy. that my ends can only be attained only
by the forcible overthrow of all existing social conditions.
All right, that's enough. That's enough. I draw the line. You know? I knew I was getting set up.
Gabe and Sal at a communistic revolution.
Gabe and Sal is fine, but I draw the line.
Yeah.
This is obscene. I will not be set up in this manner.
Gabe and Sal, not Stalin and Mao. That's what I always say.
That's basically the tagline of the Evolve Pod. So,
wow. So yeah, just now that you're part of the family, I think we're ready to go.
Excellent.
Oh, I got tears in my eyes.
Okay, so we are actually going to talk about Evolve Wrestling and WWN on this show. The place that is the best to start. I know normally we're either doing a preview of the upcoming shows or a review of the shows that have just happened. This is a little in-between show to do, you know, some year-in-review stuff. It was an excuse to bring on Joe for some fun. And, of course, Club WWN launched since the last time we recorded. So we thought this would be a good chance to talk about that. If you don't know yet, WWN launched their streaming service, Club WWN. It's going to be $9.99 a month for access to all of their video on demand events. New shows are going to hit the service on an approximately 2-week delay. Now, in addition, if you're subscribing, you're going to get 50% off all the WWN iPay-per-views. So you don't automatically get the streaming if you subscribe to Club WWN, but you do get 50% off. The first month is free, and Club WWN has integrations with Google Chromecast, Apple AirPlay, and Roku. There's also some loyalty points. When you buy things from the WWN, you will apparently earn some discounts in the future. Basically, to break it down, if you were buying the live and the VOD before and you subscribe to Club WWN now, you'll be looking at about $25 a month. If you just do the live and Club WWN, you'll be looking at $20 a month to watch both Evolve shows each month. So, AT, I want to start with you. I know I've seen you talking on Twitter that you think this is generally a good deal, but can you expand on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing to think about when we think about Club WWN is that it is an incremental, it's like another revenue stream for Evolve and WWN. They're not centering their whole business model around a streaming service. And I think that that's smart, right? Like, this is a thing where it's like, they're monetized. They have this back catalog of all this stuff, all this great Evolve Wrestling, all this Dragon Gate USA stuff, all these Shine shows. And now they're monetizing it, right? They don't have Flow Slam anymore. So they're saying, okay, if you want access to this stuff and you're not going to buy like a Blu-ray in 2017, like here's how you can get it. It's $10 a month. And we'll also throw in, you get discounts on, you know, the 50% discount is good on all the pay-per-views. You're going to get some kind of loyalty points. So I think it's a good idea. I think the thing to think about is, like, we've had people on Twitter who were like, why would I pay $9.99 a month for this and not get live streaming when I can get pay $9.99 and get the WWE Network, you know, for the same price and have more content and live streaming? And it's like, yeah, like, that's not a good business model for WWN. That doesn't make any sense, right? Like, it's like, 10 years ago, if you wanted to buy, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you wanted to buy wrestling, you know, the DVDs came out like 2 months after the show and you paid $20 and you got it in the mail. And no one was saying like, this is overpriced, right? Like, people might have said, hey, I don't have the money in my budget to buy all these DVDs. But no one was saying like, this is bullshit. This should cost less. This isn't worth it. Like, WWE decided out of the blue one day to say, hey, it's $10 a month for all this shit. And then the expectation is that now all these other smaller companies need to follow them into the abyss. Like, this isn't even, I mean, WWE's business model with the streaming service only works because of their scale, right? Because they're going to have so many customers paying a little bit of money. And even then, I'm not even sure that they're better off now than they would have been selling the pay-per-views. So, like, from my perspective, like, you can't just expect them to do what the WWE is going to do if it's not going to be a good business model for them.
Joe, when you first saw this announced, what did you think? Did you think this is going to be a good move for WWN, or the same type of idea that, well, if the streaming's not included, it's not much of a deal?
Well, I don't necessarily buy that if the streaming's not included, it's not a deal. If you look at the math, okay, so you pay the $9.99 a month for the service, right? Let's start with that. And then you get 50% off the live iPay-per-view. So if you want them, look, if you don't mind watching them on 10-day delay, you're watching all of them for $9.99, correct? Unless I'm misunderstanding.
Yeah, I think right. It's a 2-week delay, but yeah, more or less.
Okay, so you get either a 10 or 14-day delay, whatever it is. You can watch everything for $9.99. Now, if you need to see it live, you're getting 50% off. So what are they running, 3 shows next month? Is that what it is? So
2 shows, I think.
Well, they're going to have the style battle too.
Oh, you're right. That's right. 3 shows.
So then those would be, you know, the regular price is like $10. So you get 50% off. So you're paying $15 if you want to see the shows live. So you're paying a grand total dollars if you want to see all 3 shows live. Whereas before Club WWN existed, that would have cost you $30. So it's actually, if you're a hardcore fan who's buying everything anyway, you're saving $5 when they're running 3 shows in a month.
Right. So, and you're getting the whole archives whenever you want.
Right, exactly. And you're getting the Dragon Gate USA, Evolve, the entire archives. So I don't see how the hardcore fan who's watching everything anyway, like you guys, is losing here. You're saving money. And that's assuming you're buying them live. You're still saving money. If you're okay with watching them on a slight delay, it's an absolute steal. Someone like me doesn't necessarily mind watching them on a delay. So, I mean, that's an incredible deal.
So, Joe, if you're not I know you're not a hardcore watcher of Evolve, but is this something that you will subscribe to?
I think I will. I don't know if I'll subscribe to it every single month. I don't think it's going to be like a set it and forget it subscription like I do with WWE Network and New Japan World. But will it go into my rotation with Demand Progress and some of the other things I subscribe to? Yeah, I think it will, because the archive is a real draw for me. I'm into that, and then I don't really mind watching the shows on delay, but here's the thing. If I'm sitting around on a Saturday afternoon and I've got nothing going on, I got no problem coughing up another $5 to watch it live. So, you know, there's that factor too. It's generally these shows are on weekends, and if you're busy, it kind of gives you some flexibility too, right? So, look, you know you're going to get it on delay a few days, a week and a half later or whatever, 2 weeks later, but if you happen to be home, you have that option of plunking down another $5 and watching it. So, when you really break down the math, it works. And I think Talbot made a good point. It's like, just because WWE set their own price point that they feel they can get away with, why does everybody else have to follow suit? Now, I agree that you have to be, I guess, in a similar ballpark, but I don't buy the argument of, well, I'm getting all this from WWE. Yeah, but you're not getting Evolve. So it's not like apples and apples. It's not like you're getting all of that from WWE Network plus these Evolve shows. If you want the Evolve shows, you're going to have to pay for something else. And to me, I look at all of these services as separate entities. Am I getting my money's worth from this service? I don't necessarily compare it to other services.
Yeah, right. And that's go ahead, Aaron.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I mean, Joe didn't say it, but this is sort of like an underlying thing of his point, is that this isn't a service for someone who's only going to spend $10 a month on wrestling. You know, like, this is a service for Evolve's, the hardcore audience of Evolve fans, who gives like a lot of their disposable income to pro wrestling. Like, these are for the dorks who travel to WrestleMania and go to shows and like already have 2 or 3 streaming subscription services probably. And then I recognize that some people have economic concerns, and I'm not trying to be insensitive to that, but I feel like the majority of Evolve wrestling fans are people who are like, oh yeah, I can spend $20 a month on wrestling, as opposed
and they were with Flow.
Right, and they were with Flow.
So if you were spending $20 a month with Flow, in a normal month you're going to get two Evolve shows. You're going to be spending the exact same amount of money on this if you want to watch them live, and you're saving half the money if you watch them on a delay.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, this isn't as good a deal as like the yearly $12 a month Flow subscription service, but it's a better deal than like just the regular WWN pay-per-view offerings.
Yeah, the real problem that it starts to present is, like you're talking about, AT, is there are all these streaming services now. Everybody apparently feels like they need to compete with WWE's $9.99 price point. And unless people start coming together and putting lots of different promotions on one service, it just becomes, it's too big, right? Like, where do we go from here where people can actually watch a lot of this wrestling, instead of us having to choose, oh, I can subscribe to one or two of these at a time. I mean, I do New Japan. I only do WWE occasionally, like when a big NXT show comes up or something I want to watch. I get all these Evolve shows, but there's like some point I can't watch any more of the streaming services. So is that where this is going? Just that it's going to be a completely fragmented world, a market where everybody is kind of choosing 2 to 3 to 4 that they want to watch, but we all can't watch everything anymore?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's where it is going. I think that's where it will be for the foreseeable future. Like, I don't know how big the pie is in general, so a bunch of promotions teaming up on one service. I mean, we saw what Flow Slam tried to do, and all the promotions were like, no, we have our own thing. Why are we going to team up with a bunch of other promotions and only get a piece of it? I think that, so that's one thing. And I think that, yeah, ultimately the competition is going to be the same that it ever was. There's a lot of wrestling companies, and the ones that put out the best product will be the ones that get the consumers' money.
Yeah, I don't think WWN's goal here is to yank you away from WWE Network. I think their goal here is just to give a reasonable deal to the hardcore Evolve fan. And I think they did a good job with that. I mean, on the surface, it looks a little shady to charge extra for the live streams, but it's like we all talked about. When you break down the math, it's really not. And they're giving you that option to save a lot of money if you're willing to watch them on delay. So I don't know. I thought it looked like a good plan when they first rolled it out. I still feel that way. I was not a Flow subscriber, but I could see myself paying for this.
All right. Have either of you guys signed up or played around with it at all?
I haven't.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, it has integrations with Chromecast, Apple AirPlay, and Roku. But like the technology, like the user experience, like sucks. It's like not good or intuitive. It's like an ugly site. But from my perspective, like I'm okay with dealing with that, which is like, if you're going to fly in, you know, Walter and AR Fox and DJZ every month, I'd rather the money go there than to sort of have to deal with, I'd rather have a shitty like user experience and good stream, good video quality and good talent, than to skimp on other three of those other things to have like a really pretty website.
Which again plays into the idea that this is really for a super hardcore wrestling dork. You know, this isn't, you're not trying to attract your Gen Pop WWE fan to make the jump here. You know, this is for people like us and people listening to this podcast.
All right. I think we've covered Club WWN. I do want to, since we have Joe on here, and you don't normally dive too deep into Evolve, I wanted to run a few more things past you and kind of get your thoughts on it. We're talking about the business of Evolve and WWN. And apart from the streaming, the other thing that I've been thinking a lot about, and I've talked a lot about on this podcast, is the fact that Evolve is a, you know, relatively small company. They're not doing big houses generally. Yet they run lots of different towns around the country, not even in a particular area. I mean, they somewhat concentrated in the Northeast, but they're also been going to the Midwest. They run in Florida. I find this bizarre. Joe, what are your thoughts on the way that Evolve runs their business as far as the places that they run shows?
Well, I mean, there's clearly cities that they do not do well in. You know, North Carolina, I can think of a few disasters. Atlanta, I don't think Atlanta did well. Maybe you guys could help me out with that. But the thing about it is the number that I was given as far as, you know, they got to pack that van and travel from Florida to New York and Florida to Philly and then back. And, it, you know, that cost them about $1,500 right off the top, you know, fuel, feeding people, putting them up in hotels, things of that nature. So there are a lot of costs involved in sort of bouncing around the country. I think there's really no reason not to tag along at WrestleMania, obviously. I think that the Royal Rumble weekend, I mean, I was at those shows and, you know, they did well there. They drew plenty of fans to San Antonio this year. So I think there's no reason not to tag along on big WWE weekends. But yeah, I agree. I think, you know, they should cut down on the – now, look, I get – here's the other thing. The reason that they're willing to run Florida is you can get those buildings for next to nothing. And that's why they can get away with, you know, 20 people paid, 10 people paid, 15 people paid or whatever, because you're getting those buildings for practically nothing. So it's kind of a trade-off for the travel, right? I mean, but so I kind of get it, and there's a lot of talent based in Florida. But and look, and there's something to be said for trying new markets to see if you can get something to hit. I understand that too. But yeah, in general, I think they can save a ton of money by cutting down on some of the travel.
Yeah, that's basically my thought. I find it very strange that they run all over, because there are markets that don't do well. And you're right about Atlanta. That Massachusetts market that they run isn't very good. You know, they do their best business at La Boom in New York. Mm. And that's also their hottest building. Like, you think the promotion would look so much better if they ran out of there more.
It's also a New York building. So it probably costs exponentially more to run there than it does when you can, you know, when you can run that terrible building in Florida that they run all the time, that they've been running for years with the Orpheum, or what town is that?
In New York City.
Yeah. I mean, so it's kind of like, do you break even run in New York with a packed house, or do you make a couple bucks run in Florida, even if you have to run a van down there or whatever and have no fans and have this dead atmosphere? It's kind of like the Paul Heyman thing, right? Like, the ECW arena for years was a loss leader for ECW. They did not make money on those shows. They lost money on those shows, but you had that hot, rabid, packed to the rafters crowd that made it look like the hottest product on the planet. Right. So you kind of have to make a business decision at that point. Do we make that trade off? Do we lose money running this venue every time but making our product look hot? Or do we run a shittier venue and draw 15 fans and maybe make a couple bucks? And I mean, that's, you know, that's, I don't know. That's a business decision that I think everyone's going to fall on a different side of the fence on. But it seems like what Evolve does is they do both.
Sorry.
No, I was done.
Yeah. I think that you're starting to see them make a decision, right? I think if you look at the last few months and the upcoming months, and you look at where they're running, you're seeing a lot of New York, right? They ran New York in June. They ran New York in August. They ran New York in October. And they're running New York. They ran New York in December. And they're running New York twice in January. So I think that, like, when they got the Flow Slam money, they tried some new markets. They had some winners, and some, like, Atlanta seemed like a loser. But it looks like those Detroit and Chicago shows do okay. Especially the Detroit shows seem like they do really well. But it seems like more and more they are working to base themselves in New York, which I think is a good idea. I've talked about, like, you should just build this New York market as much as you can build it and get people excited about your product. And when they tune in, it's like a hype crowd and it looks good. So, yeah, I think that they're really starting to double down in New York. They ran it in December, and then they're coming back next month, and they're doing one show in Queens and one show in Brooklyn, or two shows in Brooklyn with Style Battle. So, and if you read the WWN alerts, which, you know, Aaron and I, like, we study the WWN alerts, like, you know, the ancient rabbis would study the Talmud, you know, we're always looking for clues to better understand the word of Gabe. And
the way we the Communist Manifesto. That was
right. That too. Communist, yes, obviously.
Opportunity on your part.
Yeah, we all have our own sacred texts. And but yeah, they said, you know, in the last WWN alerts, we love New York so much, so we're coming back again. I don't like, and I think that there's opportunity there. Like, if you look at like we have House of Glory and Tier One Wrestling, but there, I don't know, there isn't a promotion that you look at and say that's New York's pro wrestling company, the way that you look at Chicago and AAW or, you know, PWG in Los Angeles. And I don't know, it's a big city, and I know that it's hard to run here, but there should be like a big, high level, like super indie level caliber of wrestler flagship New York wrestling promotion. No?
Sure, but then those are the most expensive buildings, like Joe was just talking about, right? So how are they gonna make money and run New York all the time?
Well, we'll see. I you know, they may be getting, Laboom might be less expensive than we think it is. Like, they may have a deal there that's good for them, is what I've heard. But I don't know how reliable that is. I don't know if I should have said that. But yeah, the word on the street is that they get a decent deal on that Laboom building. And this building they run in Brooklyn is like at the ass end of Brooklyn. Or not the ass end, that's mean. It's just like far from Manhattan, right?
If you are so, you are so afraid to offend anyone. Just in case there's one listener who lives on the ass end of Brooklyn.
Yeah, apologies to anyone. Bath Beach, Diker Heights, Bay Ridge, you know, wonderful neighborhoods. But if you think about Manhattan as sort of like the center of the city where like everyone has to kind of like go to for work and the trains go through there. Like if you want to go from Queens to Brooklyn, a lot of times you have to go in through Manhattan, you know, on the way there. And so like the place in Brooklyn is like all the way down in Brooklyn. It's a schlep from Manhattan. If you don't live in, if you live in like Queens or Manhattan, it's like a schlep. So and it doesn't have air conditioning. It's a bad building. So I imagine that that building is like affordable enough, I assume.
You know, I could tell you that anecdotally, I have friends in Jersey who there are times, and I don't know the specific buildings. You probably know them though, where they won't go because they're just too far from the closest train station. They don't want to either walk or take a cab from where they get off the train. And that has prevented them from buying tickets and going to shows. So I'm hearing you say this, that some of these buildings are on the outer reaches of, you know, of the city, and it is making sense to me.
Yes.
So that's lost revenue right there. And I don't know how much you want to extrapolate that, you know, what my half a dozen friends equals in terms of how many other people are having the same thoughts, but right. That is a real thing. I mean, you know, if you can't get there easily, by, you know, via the subway, I mean, a lot of people just won't go.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure that they pull a lot from Long Island, and I'm sure they pull a lot from like parts of this, like the metro area where people have cars. But yeah, you're right. It's tough. I mean, that's why I think it's good that on a weekend, they're going to have those shows in Brooklyn and in Queens. Like I'm going to go to the ones in Brooklyn. Cause I got to go see Nick Gage versus Walter. But like, and if the card wasn't as strong in Brooklyn, like I could go to the Queen show and skip the Brooklyn one, and someone who lives in Park Slope could be like, okay, I'm gonna like schlep down to Bath Beach and see that show and skip the one in Queens. So I don't know, it'll be interesting. I didn't really have like a thesis on this take. I was just kind of talking it through, but
I didn't expect this episode to be so heavy on New York geography, but
yeah, I hope everyone has their subway maps. If you want to just take a moment and want to listen to that great conversation again, you can go back a couple minutes, pull up your subway map and sort of, you know, really get to the bottom of this debate.
I would strongly suggest you do that. All right. The meat of the show was intended to be about kind of the year in review of Evolve. Take a look back and see where they come, where they're going, and what our favorite stuff and least favorite stuff was from the year. So I guess, AT, let's start with you. Just generally, how did you feel about Evolve from January to December?
Well, it was a weird year with a lot of ups and downs. And I would say that, you know, they lost hero after the January shows, and right before that, they'd lost, you know, Gargano and Nice and Gulak, and, you know, kind of gutted the mid card, the mid and upper card of the Evolve roster. But yeah, and it seemed like the first half of the year they really tried to fill in those gaps with sort of guest stars. We'd see them rely on a Kyle O'Reilly or a Donovan Dijak or a Leo Rush to come in for a weekend or two and sort of add a little star power to the top of the cards. And it felt like the promotion was kind of like sort of a little stale in the middle parts of the year. You know, it didn't seem like they were really things just kind of ran together a lot of times. You know, we saw the big elevation of Keith Lee was sort of the big breakout star of Mania Weekend. And yeah, later we started to see towards the end of the year, though, that they kind of started to find their guys, right? We're seeing the elevation of Darby Allin, of Austin Theory, of Jocka, of Chris Dickinson. And the promotion feels like it's on an upswing now. And as we'll talk about, along the way, there was a lot of great wrestling.
Yeah, to me, I mean, you know, Gabe admitted in, you know, one of the brilliant Sports Illustrated pieces that he might have gotten a little boring or a little bored booking Evolve this year. I think we saw that. But to me, the story is it all kind of goes around Flow Slam. And the story of the year of Evolve is Gabe Sapolsky as the athlete who got the big contract and then doesn't perform with the big contract. They kind of fall back on their laurels a little bit. Gabe has basically admitted as much. And so we saw it kind of get a little boring. We saw it kind of get a little stale because he wasn't as motivated to put out the same type of creative content because he didn't really have to. There was a contract where the check was going to be coming every month. I mean, there were some incentives built into the contract that we all saw, but largely it was just, you know, you show up and do the shows and we'll pay you. And now what we're seeing toward the end of the year is Gabe as the athlete in the contract year. He's hungry again. He knows he has to perform so that, A, he's got to sell tickets at Mania. B, he wants to do some more things with streaming or whatever is going to come next and build up the brand again. So I do think that we saw that in the middle of the year, but now we're back on the upswing again. And I'm really excited about Evolve for once. Joe, you don't watch Evolve in the same way we do, but I know you follow everything since you guys cover everything on the flagship. But how did you see this year playing out for Evolve?
Okay, so I think that it was definitely a transition year because they, you know, they had that loaded roster the year before and that incredible year the year before, and you know they got raided and a lot of people left. You know, they, you know, Thatcher gone to Germany, TJP and Gulak and Chris Hero and all of those dudes off to WWE, Cedric Alexander, all those guys, Willow Spray gone, you know, so. It was a transition year with the roster, and then sort of like what you alluded to, they would bring guys in on weekends, but then even those guys would get signed up. So you couldn't do anything long-term with your Donovan Dijaks and your people like that as well. So the company ended up being built around Zack Sabre Jr. and now Keith Lee and Matt Riddle, predominantly those three. But the rest of the roster was really in flux. And I think that's why you saw your Chris Dickinson and your Jockas move up, because there were spots available, and those guys stepped up admirably, I think. I think they've done a good job. The other thing you have to remember in terms of, you know, maybe the creative malaise, I think those are all good points that Bentley made in terms of having the security of money coming in every month. But the other thing is Gabe Sapolsky has been consistently booking pro wrestling since, like, 2002. I mean, we're talking about a 15-year run of booking pretty high-level wrestling. The highest level indie wrestling you can possibly book, and pretty high level wrestling. Wrestling bookers do not last 15 years. I mean, generally they'll burn out after a year or two. I mean, you look back at the territory days, you know, you would cycle out your bookers because you just run out of ideas. There's not, you know, it's a tough job and it's a mental grind. And this guy's been doing it for 15 straight years. And, you know, I wrote a personality profile on Gabe in Fighting Spirit magazine that came out last month. And one of the big overriding themes with that profile that I wrote was how he has been doing this for so long and goes through periods of burnout. And he does admit when he goes through those periods of burnout. I mean, he admitted, you know, he came on our flagship show, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, and we interviewed him, and he admitted to, you know, going through a period of burnout in the Dragon Gate USA days. So that plays into it too. I mean, you know, there's mental fatigue at play, you know, and you can kind of always tell when he gets super motivated again and has great ideas, and when he is motivated and when his mind is fresh, he is a really good booker. You know, I know he takes a lot of shit from a lot of people, but you know, when he hits on something, you know, he really nails it. And look, he has a lot of ideas that fall flat. I thought, you know, circling this back to Evolve, I thought the Thatcher thing went on way too long. And, you know, they should have cut bait on that, you know, much sooner than they did. I was there in Dallas live when Thatcher was the least over person in the promotion, you know, at a WrestleMania weekend, and he was the champion. And that was just embarrassing for the company. It was the guy that people wanted to see the least. But I kind of actually forgot your question at this point. I've just been rambling on. But
no, that, I just wanted you to talk about, you know, how you saw the year in Evolve go. And say,
yeah, so, yeah, just to wrap it up. I mean, yeah, just a year in transition. We saw some new guys come up, and we see the big three that they're built around now. And I think that, you know, a lot of the outside of the ring news may have dominated, but there was some really good wrestling. With that said, there were some really poor shows too.
Yeah, I agree about everything you said. It just sort of like, I can't imagine like being creative like that constantly for 15 years.
I can't even think of anyone who has booked pro wrestling for half that length consecutively. I mean, I definitely can't think of anyone who's done it for 15 years straight. For sure. I mean, I can't think of a single person.
Yeah, unless you want to count like a Vince McMahon, you know.
Who has a team of writers and had Pat Patterson
and
for
is definitely
two
not
decades.
And he's writing his best shit right now, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if he was doing it all on his own, I mean, he wouldn't have done it for this. I mean, you know, he's had people, whether it was starting off with George Scott and then Pat Patterson and then Vince Russo and then, you know, a team of writers since then. So I don't even think that's necessarily comparable.
Yeah. And no, and I also agree too that he's unfairly picked on, I think, just because he's just like he just needs a publicist, you know? He just needs like a PR consultant to help interface with the public sometimes. But he's really good. I think it just felt like a lot of times this year was like things started to go somewhere and didn't really come together in the right way, or they went a little too long. Like we saw, you know, we'll talk about the Darby Allin, Ethan Page feud, I'm sure. So I do think like it's a good promotion with really good wrestling. And I don't know. I have high hopes for the booking for next year. I thought Aaron and I talked about it last month, but or I guess earlier this month rather, but I thought we thought the last two shows this December weekend were really well booked.
Yeah. This was like the most challenging 2 year period for an indie booker with WWE signing so many people and so much talent being in flux and not knowing who's going to work for you in a month, let alone 6 months, especially when you're booking the way Gabe does, where you have, it's a lot easier to book a monthly promotion that really doesn't run a ton of storylines or those sorts of things. But it was a real challenge over the last 2 years, losing talent and not necessarily knowing when you're going to lose them and then trying to replace them and then trying to do something cohesive with these new faces too.
Yeah, that's what we've talked a lot about, building around guys like Chris Dickinson and Jaka, or even at times Tracy Williams, even though I'm not a big Tracy fan. But these are guys who probably aren't going in the near future to WWE. So, you know, maybe those are the guys that Gabe should build around. And he seems like now he is starting to build more around guys who aren't going anywhere. That's where it looks like we're going anyway.
Yeah. And I guess one thing, too, is like we almost glossed over it. Like we talked about all the guys they lost. Like they lost Drew Galloway on the night of, you know, the WWN Super Show when he was in the main event.
I mean, that's a
like the night of. They were just like, yo, we need this dude to sit in the crowd. Like, go fuck yourself. You know, find some, you know, find someone else to put in the match.
That just hammers home my point. I mean, it's just so hard. You know, who knows what was planned? But you're like the guys that Bentley mentioned that they're building around, and then you have Lee Riddle and Zack Sabre Jr. who are under contract, so it's safe to do things with guys like that too. But then again, with the nature of those contracts, that doesn't even guarantee you anything because, you know, they have those out clauses. So, well, I guess when it comes to Riddle, you don't really have to worry too much. You know, he's not, going anywhere anytime soon, but, and I guess, you know, I guess to some extent, Zack Sabre Jr. as well, but I mean, Keith Lee can get a call at any time, you know, contract or not.
Yeah. He's a guy you expect to go to WWE at some point, but Sabre, it looks like they didn't offer him or he turned down. I don't know exactly what happened there, but he's not leaving.
Yeah, what's give us the dirt? What's the deal with Sabre? Why is he still in WWE?
He doesn't want it right now.
He's a woke bae.
What was that?
He's a woke bae. He doesn't want to go work for the fascist wrestling company.
He's woke for sure. That may have something to do with it. I mean, I've heard some other things, but that could play into it for sure. I mean,
but here's what I need your real take on, Joe. This is a big Everything Evolves topic. How horny do you think Zack Sabre Jr. is?
How horny do I think he is?
Yeah.
That's a good question for me, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah, more horny than average or less horny than average?
On my limited knowledge of some things I know about the man, he's more horny than average.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We talked about this on a previous. We even put up a poll on Twitter. Most people say he's less horny than average. I think that's crazy.
Why would they say that?
I don't know. That's just the vibe they think he puts off.
He's a young, virile man. I don't understand why he'd be considered less horny in any regard, you know?
I've told the story many times of him at AAW at his merch table, shirtless, drinking a Corona. He looked pretty horny. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, shirtless with a Corona is a pretty horny look.
Right.
All right.
I knew that Joe Lanza would have the authority to take.
I'm a person who admits, I'm an adult. I admit when I'm wrong. And I guess, according to the backstage gossip, Zack Sabre Jr., he loves to fuck and he's hornier than average. And I apologize to all our listeners.
I didn't say all that, but fine.
That's Zach definitely fucks. I don't think there's any question.
But I mean, obviously, but in any event.
I think he's a fan of the fucking. I think he's a fan of the chapping, and he does what he has to do. And I do think he's above average horny for sure.
All right.
Thank you.
There we go.
All right. Now that we've established that Zack Sabre Jr. is more horny than average, let's talk about some of the good wrestling that's happened in Evolve this year. We're going to do a little bit of awards, have a little fun with that. We're going to start with the big prize, which is Match of the Year. Aaron, what was your Match of the Year for Evolve in 2017?
Well,
should we start at the top or should we build up to the
match? Let's just go with the Match of the Year because I didn't have as many like runners-up sort of.
Okay.
I just had a lot of, randos, but for me, like, wrestling is best when it's memorable, when it makes us feel, when it surprises us, when it draws us in, even when we're not really expecting to be drawn in, right? When it takes you, right? When you're just along for the ride. And for me, you can have a million sort of like, really, there were a lot of great matches this year. But for me, the one that stands out most in my Match of the Year is Zack Sabre Jr. versus Jaka from Evolve 87 at Laboom. So Zack Sabre Jr. versus Jaka won at Evolve 87 at Laboom in June. And I watched it back again today. And like, what I love about the match is that you can just sort of see them working the crowd and sucking them in little by little over time, right? Like, Jaka comes out before this match and cuts a pre-match promo, and he goes, "Who all here thinks that I can win the Evolve Championship tonight in New York?" And it's his hometown, and everyone there, like, no one gives a fuck. Everyone's booing. Like, no one thinks he can beat Zack Sabre Jr. For the Evolve Championship. And little by little throughout this match, I mean, he comes out with intensity. They're slapping each other, within 2 minutes of the match starting. But every time Jaka gets something going, Zack's able to grab his leg and put him in a hold or something like that. He's just too quick. His technical prowess is too much, despite Jaka's power. And you know, throughout this match, Zach is just, you know, doing Zack Sabre Jr. things, twisting his arm, putting him in danger with for submissions. But Jaka just keeps coming back. He kicks out of a penalty kick. You know, Chris Dickinson is losing his mind on the outside behind his spread. And, like, over the course of this match, it's like, oh, they're kind of getting into Jaka. Oh, they're 50-50. Oh, and, like, by the time that Jaka hits his wheel kick and he's going for, you know, his Liger bomb to try to win the match, I mean, he stands up and he deflexes, he takes his deep breaths, and, you know, he's going for the win, and the crowd is just fully behind him. They're yelling his name, Jaka, Jaka, you know. They're losing their shit for this guy who, at the beginning of the match, nobody really, I mean, people knew who he was. He's an evolved tag team champion. People kind of cared about him, but nobody gave him a chance in this match. And certainly no one was going, you know, outside of like his family and friends was going to this match. Like, I really want to see Jaka win. And so people are losing their minds. And then the exact moment where you get in, you're sucked in, you're behind him, you think he can win, you know, Zack Sabre Jr. counters, puts him in that European clutch, the back bridge of doom, and wins the match. And Jaka's just left crestfallen. I thought it was a beautiful story. And there are matches that are probably like technically better, like that would get more stars probably. But for me, like that, this was the best piece of pro wrestling and the thing that I'll remember. I was at the show, so that biases me, but that's probably the thing I'll remember most from this year. And that was a three match, you know, that was the first in a really great trilogy that they had. Joe, if you haven't, and anyone listening, if you haven't seen these Jaka, Zack Sabre Jr. matches, if you get the Club WWN, go check out the three matches they had. It was a great three match story. And that's my favorite. That's my match of the year.
I'm also going to go with being there live bias. But my match comes from over WrestleMania weekend. At Evolve 81 there in Orlando, it was the Keith Lee versus Donovan Dijak match. I had not seen their previous matches. This was a weird crowd. I forget what they were running up against, but it was a really small crowd that night, as I recall anyway. Somebody could correct me. But I remember it being small, and it was like, okay, Keith Lee and Donovan Dijak sounds fun. And then they did just a bunch of stuff I've never seen two guys that size do, and I just had the time of my life watching it. So that one, it was the winner for me. Also really liked the Keith Lee and Ricochet match from that same weekend. I will never forget the pounce in that match when Ricochet took the pounce off of Keith Lee, and it was just a great bump. And that was a really good match. But so those were two that I really liked. I was at both of them live, so I'm sure that takes them up a little bit. Joe, do you have an opinion on the best match at Evolve this year?
Yeah, I do. It's good because we all have different answers.
Excellent.
That same weekend, though, Zack Sabre Jr. ACH was really good, too. I think that was the first night of the Mania Weekend shows.
Yeah, that's terrific.
Can I cheat a little bit? Does WWN Live Super Show count?
Absolutely.
Oh, geez. That's an emphatic answer. The South Pacific Power Trip versus Dickinson and Jaka match, I can't really decide between that one from the WWN Super Show or the Chris Hero Zack Sabre Jr. match from San Antonio. Now that was the Hero going away, obviously, and a lot of people felt that match was a little excessive, and I think that is probably my biggest gripe with it as well. But in terms of emotion and being sucked into a match, that was the match this year that hit on those chords for me. I think that was on the 28th, the second of the two shows in San Antonio, Sabre and Hero. And then in terms of just pure action and cool spots and things of that nature, then it would have to be South Pacific Power Trip versus Dickinson and Jaka.
Yeah, those were two great matches. Also the ACH Zack Sabre match. I'm not a progress watcher. That was my first time seeing South Pacific Power Trip, and I immediately became a huge fan of theirs and started trying to catch more of their matches ever since that happened.
Yeah, that match banged. And I'm mad I missed Lee Dijak live. I got the show late because I was going to that Mania weekend with friends who are not like hardcore wrestling fans. And so it was like really important to them that we like get a weed run in. And so like we were getting weed and like it was early in the show and I missed it. It was some bullshit.
That's a disgrace. Look, I have no problem with the weed. let me make that clear. I mean, you know, I'm not a weed. I don't do the weed myself, Tal. But I have no issue with it. I believe it should be legalized as well. But you need to take care of that before the show. Okay, you can't miss any action to go on a weed run. This is what are you doing? You do a podcast on this product.
But we didn't do a podcast at the time.
It's still embarrassing.
That's fair, but it's still a bad job out of you.
Absolutely. It's a bad job by me, as they would say on New York sports radio. But it was like I kept trying to text the dealer, and it was just like we couldn't really line up a time, and it was the only time we could do it. And my friends were like, oh, like we're going to Kaiju tonight. Like we have to get this weed. And so we did, and I went in this dude's house, and it was like he was like living with his uncle. And he was like a friend's like friend from that they worked together at a restaurant. And they had to pretend that like he like introduced me to his uncle and was like, oh, this is Aaron. Like we worked together at this restaurant. And I like had to meet the uncle and like pretend that like we knew each other, were friends. And then we like went into his room and got the weed in the condo. And I came back into the car and my two friends were just like watching porn on their mobile phone. Just walking in the car and they're just like watching porn, and it's just like on there. I just like, it was the most surreal experience of my life. Just like a very strange 5 minutes of like my uncle walking out in the car and then my friends just having like porn on.
I got a lot of questions.
Yeah, let's hear them.
Yeah. First of all, what kind of porn were they watching together?
It was man on woman, just sort of like straight porn.
These are heterosexual men.
The woman's name was Janice Griffith. Yeah, two heterosexual men watching straight porn together.
And you remember the actress's name?
Yes, they were really big fans of hers. I don't remember the male actor's name, but yeah, it was Janice Griffith and some guy on Pornhub, okay. I think.
So two hetero dudes watching hetero porn together in a car, waiting for you to emerge with the weed.
Yeah.
After you had to meet this guy's uncle.
Yeah.
Have you ever watched porn together with your bros?
Because no.
I got to tell you, that's a solo activity for Lanza.
Same here. I mean, not that I'm like, you know.
You are so afraid to offend people. This is
right.
Crazy.
Yeah. I just haven't. I think
we all get it. We all get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is, I don't see the point in watching porn unless I'm beaten off to it, you know? And I'm definitely not going to beat off the porn next to my bro who I'm going to go to a wrestling show with. I don't know. I feel like it's a solo activity. I feel like it's a little weird that that's how they chose to kill the time while you were in there scoring the goods. Yeah. I don't know. I wish they were here so I can ask a lot of questions to them, because I feel like you can't answer them.
One of them is coming back, so you can ask him all about.
Was this in New Orleans?
Yeah.
Okay. You have to introduce me to this guy.
Absolutely. Because, it's done.
Okay. Because I need to know.
You're going to be there?
Yes.
Oh, this is going to rule.
Yeah.
I will be in New Orleans. Now, I don't know if I'm staying the full 3 days or what shows or where I'm going to be. I will be in that town, though, at some point, you know, during that weekend. I got to question this guy on the porn. And find out why he felt like this was a thing to do. I have never been compelled to just watch the porn with one of my friends. It's bizarre. You know, there's only one instance where I'm watching porn with another human, and that's if I'm with a girl and I'm trying to warm it up a little, you know? Sure. Maybe my game isn't on point that night, or it's just not moving the way I'd like it to. So you nudge him towards some porn. It starts off playful. Hey, let's watch some porn, teehee, you know? And then it just moves. I think we've all been there. And then hopefully it moves along from there. It gets kind of the gears moving, and then you do what you got to do. But I don't think I've ever watched. Like, what is the point? I mean, there's no end game there to watching the porn. Why are you just like, I'm wondering, were they aroused by the porn? Were they unable to be aroused by the porn because they're watching it with another, like a friend? I have so many questions. This is fascinating to me.
Yeah. And I certainly understand if you like watch the porn for the art, like I get it, but for me, it's just, I'm just doing it to beat off. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I was surprised to see it and they put it away pretty quickly after I got into it.
Oh, now see, that's a key detail.
Yeah, they were like, oh, haha, and then they were like, you know.
So they were a little embarrassed that you
called. I don't think they were, like, embarrassed, but they were like, oh, Aaron's, like, this is, like, not really a thing that Aaron would do.
Oh, they were like, oh,
I think they're just, like, hornier than I am. They're more,
gotcha.
Yeah.
So this was, like, they were like, this is not Aaron's jam.
Yeah.
We need to put the porn away.
Yeah.
But I guess what I want to know, Joe, yeah. If you get to talk to them, please let me know if I'm not there. I just want to know how this started.
Right.
I guess.
Yeah.
Like, whose idea it was, where that idea sprang from.
Yeah, were they talking about porn before you got out of the car?
Not really. Like, one of my friends who is not coming back this year, but he's just, like, very horny. Like, I would say he has a very high sex drive. And so I imagine it was his idea, but I don't know for sure.
I'm taking notes as we speak. I'm going to talk to this other dude, and I'm going to get to the bottom of this.
I can't wait. I hope you'll come back on the show to report back what you find out.
That's a good idea.
It is. All right, so as much as I like talking about weed and
porn, do we want to talk about the other matches? There's other things, other honorable mentions?
If you want to. I mean, I kind of threw in the other ones that I was talking about, but go ahead.
I gave three, so floor is yours.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to throw in some more, AT.
Yeah, I think one match that also stands out also from the main, since we're speaking of Mania weekend, Darby Allin versus Ethan Page, I think is a match that stands out. It was kind of like a horror movie, you know, a horror thriller of a match with the monster Ethan Page sort of coming after Darby Allin. Just some insane spots of Darby Allin being lawn darted into the wall and package pile driver through chairs and he kicked out. It was just like a great, and that was a well-built feud that, you know, that was really well done. And so I thought it was like just a great violent match. And then, yeah, I would say the other things that you guys mentioned, the Keith Lee Ricochet match, the South Pacific Power Trip versus Doom Patrol. I thought Keith Lee versus Matt Riddle from Evolve 87 in June was just like two stars going balls to the wall. I thought that was great. And the other match I would shine a light on is Leo Rush versus Zack Sabre Jr. from Evolve 85 in May. Just a really good, intense, hard-hitting, fast-paced match. So, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to shout out one more, and that was Matt Riddle versus Tracy Williams at Evolve 93 in Summit, Illinois. That was like, we bitched a lot that they were, they waited too long for that match. And that, you know, a lot of it had died down, a lot of the heat between the two guys had died down. But they worked the match as if it was the hottest feud in the world. And so it ended up paying off anyway. So I would definitely suggest people watch that match if you didn't catch it. The next thing we're going to talk about is our wrestler of the year in Evolve. And Joe, I want to hear from you first on this one.
It's Zack Sabre Jr.
Well, damn it. I was hoping you were going to bring some variety to the show here, Joe.
I mean, it's kind of, I mean, you know, I, you know, by any measure, you know, first thing I do is think about my gut when I think about any year end award. And that's my answer from my gut is Zack Sabre Jr. But then what I'll do is I'll look through my notes and I'll see if anything changes my mind. And I look through my notes and I got my spreadsheet with my 4-star plus matches, which is something I like to look at. And he was the clear leader in the company in that regard too. So to me, he's an easy pick.
Yeah, I looked at my spreadsheet as well. Obviously, my wrestler of the year is Zack Sabre Jr. We have sung his praises throughout the year on this show. I was surprised. I thought that Matt Riddle had a bad year. Or not a bad year, but a less good year than I expected. But when I look back at my spreadsheet, I had tons of high-rated matches for Matt Riddle. And I do want to shout out, you know, it's hard to do a tag team of the year because there are only a few tag teams. But I just want to mention Doom Patrol in this part of the conversation because Dickinson and Jaka as a team were great all year long. Like one of the best tag teams in the world, in my opinion, this year. And so I just wanted to shout them out. AT, did you also cast your vote for Labor's Zack Sabre Jr.?
Yeah. I mean, shout out Doom Patrol, shout out to Matt Riddle, shout out to Keith Lee, but like, it's Zack Sabre Jr., the hornier than average, the ultimate class warrior, and the Evolved champion in a walk. It's just not even really close. I mean, he just had he was just so consistently great this year. And you go through and you look at the Chris Hero match, the title win against Thatcher, the match against ACH, the Leo Rush matches, the matches against Jaka, Keith Lee in September. I mean, he was just excellent in a year where there was just a lot of turmoil and a lot of ups and downs and a lot of booking decisions that didn't like totally all the way come together. There was one constant, and it was just Zack Sabre Jr. was just excellent night in, night out. So,
yeah, he rules. He rules. All right, show of the year is the next one we're going to talk about. Now, I had two that really came to mind. One was a little better than the other. You know, I thought after Mania Weekend, a lot of people kind of shitted on the shows for Mania Weekend, that there was a lot of like negative talk about them. I think because the crowds weren't that great, they weren't that big to begin with, and they weren't that loud. But the shows were really good. So, I mean, when I went back through my list of all the matches, Evolve 81 just stood far above the other matches or the other shows. I had five matches on that show at 4 stars or better. You had Yehi and Riddle, who had a really cool grappling match. Zack Sabre and Elgin kicked off that show with a great match. The Darby Allin Ethan Page match. Drew Galloway, before he ran out of Evolve, had a really fun match with Leo Rush, and it had the Keith Lee Donovan Dijak match on it. So I don't know why everybody was so down on these shows, because I thought that show ruled. The other one that I had was Evolve 79. The best match on there was a Keith Lee Tracy Williams match. I really like when Tracy has to work against a big guy, and he seems to have to break out more tricks than he normally uses in the matches that I don't like. But there was a really good tag match with a weird mix-up or a matchup of Yehi and Dickinson against Austin Theory and Anthony Henry. And this is before Theory really broke out. And they had this cool match. I'm pretty sure this is the match where Dickinson ended up doing the Pazuzu bomb over Yehi, who had the Koji Clutch locked in at the same time. So they were kind of setting up some dissension between those guys, and it was very cool. And, of course, Zack Sabre Jr. won the title from Tim Thatcher on that show. So those were the two shows that I really liked this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with those Mania, those Mania weekend shows were tough for two reasons. Cause it was like that venue was really nice, but it was like the general admission section was like disconnected from the floor in the sense that like it was very dark. And also like the GA section was like kind of just like away from the people who were seated on the floor. So I think that like you felt like you were disconnected from the other parts of the crowd, and you also couldn't really see them well. And it was just like this dark, cool venue, which was like really nice to watch a show at, but it didn't make for like a super hot crowd. And then also like, there's just so much wrestling at Mania Weekend, like that Evolve 81 show that you were talking about with Keith Lee versus Donovan Dijak. Like if you went to everything, you went to, like you went to Evolve Thursday night, then you went to Joey Janela's spring break. Then you got up at at midnight. Then you got up at noon and went to Progress. And then you would have gone to Evolve, and it would have been your like fourth wrestling show in like 18 hours, you know? So that my recollection of that show is just being like dead inside and just being like, we're all exhausted. We need a break.
Yeah. My wife literally slept during Joey Janela's spring break, like in a seat next to me. She was asleep. I'm not sure how. I mean, Doink was there, and Glacier, but she was asleep. So
this Mania weekend was peak. Just, I don't think we'll ever see another one like that again. There were just so many shows. There were too many shows. And if you did attempt to go to too many of them, not only was there just burnout from going to so many shows, you're seeing the same group of wrestlers wrestle each other 3 times a day for 3 days, and you can only mix and match them so much, and it all becomes a blur. So that definitely hurts some of the crowds. And the thing with the Evolve show specifically, as I look over my notes, is a lot of the great matches were spread around. They didn't have the one show where everything was great. And, you know, they certainly have a roster that would have been capable of that. But you had two great matches here, 3 on this show, 2 on the WWN Super Show, and you didn't have the one show where a lot of the great matches were all bunched together. So I think that's why none of those shows stand out.
Any show that stood out for you this year, Joe?
Yeah, actually, I would go with the I never know the show numbers. I know dates. 128, which I think is Evolve 77, the back end of the San Antonio double shot, which had the Chris Hero, Zack Sabre Jr. match that I already talked about. There was a lot of other good stuff on there. It opened up with Barrett Brown, a local guy, who I've always been a big fan of, and I think it was him and Darby Allin, and they did an angle with Ethan Page and the Gatekeepers, and then Zack Sabre Jr. came out and joined Brown and Allin, and they had a hot six-man to open up the show. And then they had Dickinson and Jaka against Kincaid and Sammy Guevara. Another guy, Guevara, who I, you know, saw as a literal teenager from the age 18 up, in Texas, come up on the scene. So it was good to see him get a shot and Evolve. But the one thing I remember from that match is Black Ref was awesome. I love the Evolve Black Ref. I don't know his name. Do you guys know his name, Black Ref from Evolve?
I do know his name, but I can't think of it.
It was D.A. Brewer.
D.A. Brewer.
He's in NXT now.
That dude is the best ref in the business, and yes. I've thought it forever, and I probably should have took the time to learn his name and stop calling him Black Ref. But he was so awesome in that Dickinson, Jaka, Kincaid, Guevara match. He was directing traffic. He was sending men who were not the legal men out of the ring, and you could tell the wrestlers were getting frustrated, but he was taking charge in that match, and that was his ring, and he wasn't going to let these guys get away with any shenanigans, kayfabe or otherwise. And that really stood out to me. That match fired me up. And then later on, you had that the Riddle versus Dustin.
That rule. That was so good.
And I mean, I didn't even get to see a ton of it because they were all over the building, but the roof was just exploding for these guys. And I saw the key spots that they did with the table spots and whatnot, but that match was awesome. And let me tell you something, Chucky T is so underrated in that kind of match. You know, we've seen him have those kind of matches, under this umbrella, in the Dragon Gate USA days against people like Gargano and people like John Davis. He always excels in that kind of match for whatever reason. And you wouldn't think that he would, but he does. And then, obviously at the great main event with Zack Sabre Jr. and Chris Hero, talked forever. I couldn't wait for him to stop. I mean, he just went way too long with the post-match promo, but the match itself was incredible. Really the only downer on that show was Thatcher again, because it was Thatcher and Jeff Cobb. And it was just boring as shit. And I mean, it wasn't just me. I know I like to bang on Thatcher, but every time I go to these shows live, it's just his matches. I know his matches aren't really structured to get reactions because he doesn't really work in that many high spots along the way. But I mean, people were just falling asleep during that match. Total waste of Jeff Cobb. But yeah, for me, top to bottom, that was the best show. So much, there were so many things that were different on that show. The only thing that really let me down, because I didn't expect Thatcher to entertain me, but the only thing that really let me down was the ACH Fred Yehi match. That was a disappointment, but the rest of the show I enjoyed a lot.
Yeah, that was a really good show, and that Dustin match was great. And I thought Thatcher got a lot better after he lost the title and sort of leaned into, both of us did, into being just kind of like a dickhead, asshole, ass kicker. But yeah, that title. I mean, I just remember two SummerSlam weekends ago in New York, just like it was a Gulak Thatcher title match in the main event. And it was like, you've never seen so many people looking at their phones during the main event title match. It was just, oh yeah, those matches were brutal. But
I haven't missed him since he's been gone, to be honest.
But I guess it'll be good to have him back. Did either of you see the Chuck Taylor, Zack Sabre Jr. bar match?
I haven't seen it yet.
Go check that. I mean, it's like they're certainly handcuffed because there's only so much you can do just brawling in a crowd with no ring and fighting on a bar. But I'm biased because I was at it and it was just like a lot of fun live, even if you couldn't see much. But when I went back and watched it on tape, I was like, once I was able to see the match, I was like, oh, this is pretty good. Like they did a good job of like mixing in brawling and comedy and a little like sort of traditional hold for hold wrestling and having like a fun match in a really weird, difficult environment.
Joe, I feel like you will never watch that match.
I will probably never watch that match. Although for the novelty aspect of it and the fact that, you know, Chuck Taylor really is awesome in those matches. I mean, he is such an underrated brawler. So maybe I will. Maybe I will check it out.
Yeah, it's like not long. I feel like it's like 12 minutes or whatever. It was fun. So my show of the year is Evolve 87 back at Laboon. That had my match of the year with Zack Sabre Jr. and Jaka. It had a really good I think it was the opener of Tracy Williams versus ACH. That was really strong. It had that great Beretta versus Austin Theory match where they just went all out, and it was you know, followed by the big Austin Theory turn that with Priscilla Kelly that started him going in his current direction. And the main event was Matt Riddle versus Keith Lee, and they had an awesome match. Just like a barn burner that the crowd was just totally there for. So that was like one of the most fun wrestling shows I've been to. And that was great.
I guess Theory and Beretta also wrestled on Evolve 89, which we're probably about to talk about. And I was confusing the two matches that they had. So I've spoiled it a little, but the worst show of the year is the other award we wanted to talk about. And I think we both agree that it was the stinker of Evolve 89 in Marietta, Georgia, in July. There was a Theory Beretta match on it, but it wasn't quite as good as the one that was at.
Yeah, it was really good, but it couldn't quite. And I liked the main event of that show too, but it couldn't quite. Like Evolve, it doesn't always get to like the super high peaks, but it usually doesn't have stinkers. But this show had like three or four like real stinkers on it.
Yeah, well, this was when ACH and Ethan Page were doing the Troll Boys thing.
This was the first match that they had against each other where they trolled it up.
Oh, and that was, I hated that. This had the Jason Kincaid, John Davis match that even Gabe buried on Twitter later. And the Keith Lee, Tracy Williams that was kind of aborted in the middle and was terrible. So didn't this end? The Ugly Ducklings are at the end of the show also, right?
Yeah, it was a three-way with the Ugly Duck. It was because it was the night after the Workhorsemen won the tag titles, and it was a three-way with the Ugly Ducklings, the Workhorsemen, and Dickinson and Jaka.
Yeah, I hated that. So I hated the show really badly. okay, so I guess we can move on from there. Not a lot on these other awards. We did want to shout out the best feud in Evolve this year, which I think we both agreed was the Ethan Page and Darby Allin feud. That, as far as from my perspective, paid off in Orlando, and there was never another match between the two.
Yeah, I think we agree. There were no other Darby Allin Ethan Page matches. It ended the way it should have, with Darby getting his win, but you protect Ethan Page because you have the interference from Austin Theory, and just a perfect, well booked feud that concluded the right way when it was supposed to end.
Absolutely, and then we mentioned this a little bit, but the tag team of the year. No tag team but Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
In my eyes.
Any thoughts, Joe?
I don't think there can be another pick.
Right.
I mean, what other direction would you go?
Well, some people – I saw Gabe, because Gabe's doing the WWN Awards. I saw he tweeted out, and it wasn't, like, unanimous the way it should have been. Like, there were a lot of people who were like Henry and Drake, who had a very nice year. They're good, but I just, you know, I don't see it. And then some people really like the did you like the Troll Boys, Joe?
No, I wasn't into that.
Yeah, I thought it was horrific, personally.
Not a fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're into Catch Point, you know, there's a few iterations there you could have come up with for tag teams, but Doom Patrol was great the entire year, so it's hard for me to pick anybody else. Okay. All right. Well, the last thing we wanted to talk about on this episode was just looking ahead to 2018, where we see the promotion going. We've already talked a lot about the state of the promotion, I feel like. So we don't need to go back over that. But I think what's clear, you know, Zach even talked about this a little bit on the last show, is that this is a promotion that's planning to put new people in the spotlight, build some new stars, as Zach said, but that they have to prove their worth against him before they can become stars. The new mini doc, I think they called it a short film, that Evolve put up gives us a teaser of where they're going. And I thought it was interesting that the first people that they showed in that mini doc were Darby Allin, Austin Theory, Jaka, DJZ, and Walter, which the last one was a little surprising to me. But specifically Darby, Theory, and Jaka, I feel like those are the guys that Evolve is going to build around going forward. And I like that. Joe, everybody's heard us talk a lot about Darby and Theory and Jaka, so I want to hear your thoughts on specifically those three guys and kind of who you think Evolve should be building around or pushing up to the top of the card.
Yeah, I mean, Jaka obviously had a breakthrough year, so no problem with pushing a guy like that. Austin Theory, obviously all kinds of potential there. Darby Allin, see, I don't know. I have mixed feelings on Darby Allin. Obviously, he's willing to do whatever it takes to get over, which is an admirable trait. But is there any evidence that he can go in a match in just a straight environment without taking those sorts of risks? I mean, I guess I would throw that to you guys and get your opinion on that. Or is he strictly going to be a gimmick guy, which, I mean, is fine. I mean, we've seen guys over the years and you know, you can certainly make a career that way. It may not be a long career, but what do you think of that? Do you think that he can pivot at some point and perform bell to bell at a level that people are used to in this company?
Well, I'd say he's getting there. I think that, and maybe I'm getting worked by the story, because the story they're telling is that he's living in his car, going around the country, training in different gyms and trying to get better. But if you check out the match that he had against DJZ in Chicago a couple months back, like, that was great. I mean, they were crazy, but he's taking like DJZ level crazy bumps as opposed to like the ones that he was taking early in his career in Evolve. If that's fair, you know what I mean? He's like taking big bumps, but big bumps sort of like in line with what other people will take. That match was great. And I would advise you, if you wanted to sort of get a sense of where he is, check out the Darby Allin Austin Theory match from this past Evolve weekend. I thought that it was really strong. Like, the finish didn't quite get there, but the middle section's really good. If nothing else, like, Darby Allin is a very sympathetic babyface, and he makes you feel his pain. And I think that that's like a quality that's really good to have in a wrestler. So I don't think that as a total package, I don't think he's as far along as Theory as like a full package, but he's definitely getting there. What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, I'm much more by Theory as the long-term guy, especially as a guy who's going to have probably a real big career in wrestling. But Darby has, I think he's already improved a lot since he first showed up in Evolve. He's had some matches more recently. You know, I think about the Tracy Williams match that he had, where he showed a little more chops in the ring. And to me, the story is that he knows he has to become a better wrestler to eventually beat Zack Sabre Jr., who is like the technical wrestler. So I'm really looking forward to, you know, he's probably going to lose to Zack in January when they come up against each other. And then we'll see him continue to have to improve a little bit more. I don't know if it's going to be him or Theory who's going to ultimately dethrone Zack. But I think Darby can get there. I'm optimistic about his future as a wrestler.
Yeah, they've built this Zack Sabre Jr. Darby Allin match really well. If you haven't, definitely check out that Darby mini doc from a month or so ago. They've done a really nice job with this, sort of building this match. And I don't think it's the right time to pull the trigger on Darby as a champion, but I look forward to the next chapter in the story.
But Joe, I mentioned some of the people that they highlighted. Conspicuously absent from the mini doc was Chris Dickinson, who I thought got a lot of shine in the last Evolve weekend. Do you think Dickinson is a guy that Evolve could build on?
I mean, from what I understand, he was pseudo office as well. So, I mean, you know, especially, I mean, if you read the leaked emails, that shouldn't even be really a secret anymore. You know,
I think that's open.
Yeah. I mean, there were references to I forget exactly what the references were, but to him basically being office. So I don't know what to make of that. You know, unless he was blamed for the leaks. I mean, that's just speculation, but I don't know. Although there was, wasn't there a, didn't somebody crack the code on one of the email addresses that matched his email address almost exactly? Didn't that happen as well around the time of the leaks? Not to drag you guys back into that muck again.
The match Dickinson's email?
Yeah. I saw something to that effect where someone had,
I missed that if it happened.
Yeah, I forget how they did it, but they remember there was a someone started a Twitter account with the express purpose of burying Gabe, and someone went through the Twitter.
Right.
Yeah, and the email attached started with a C and ended with an N, and like the exact number of characters. And then when that was revealed, it was quickly all deleted. So there's a possibility that there's heat there. you know, maybe he, you know, was caught and something happened in that direction. I don't know. That could just be me stirring the pot. But if all is well, then yeah, it is a bit surprising that he would have been featured.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, maybe just because he didn't wrestle on the last two shows because there was an incident with Rob Killjoy. Did you see the thing that happened with Rob Killjoy of the Ugly Ducklings?
I did not.
Okay, so yeah, there was at the November, or I guess they didn't run November. So the October shows, Jaka went for a dive on Killjoy. Killjoy did not catch him, and Dickinson appeared to kick him for real.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So Dickinson was suspended he didn't wrestle, but it was weird because he didn't wrestle on the shows on the December weekend, but he was like very prominently featured in angles. But I don't know. We'll see. It may just be like that the mini documentary was about the Evolve Championship, and it looks like they're setting Dickinson up for a shot against Keith Lee for the WWN Championship.
So maybe just temporary punishments for various incidents. The Ugly Ducklings certainly didn't acquit themselves well at all in many regards in Evolve. I don't know where you guys stand on that, but I didn't even know about the missed catch.
Been open about kind of hating the Ugly Ducklings. So
yeah, they did not look good at all, and I didn't even know about that incident. Which, I mean, I that's old school wrestling justice. I don't even know if I can necessarily blame him if he threw a shoot kick at the guy after he nearly killed his partner. So
yeah, he appeared to just stomp the hell out of him for quite a while, to the point that Jaka tried to like pull him off of him. Stop him from stomping on him. So it looked real at the time, and there was a lot of speculation that it was, but then they played it up like an angle on the last show, so it's hard to say. But
well, that could have obviously been the cover, you know.
Right.
But you know, if he missed him on a catch, I could totally, especially with a guy like Dickinson who's known to be a bit fiery to say the least.
Sure.
So I could definitely see that being the case.
All right, well, those are probably the directions or the people that they're going to be focusing on.
Yeah, a couple other things I wanted to talk about, I guess, is just sort of like generally, like, how do you guys feel about the promotion right now? Like, where do you – I don't know. What are you looking forward to in the next year? What are you hoping for? How excited are you to watch this promotion in the new year?
I feel like – with roster stabilization, it'll all work itself out. I really think a lot of the disjointedness came from just uncertainty with the roster. All the guys that were cycled in and out, like your Elgins and your Dijaks and people like that, and all the turnover, the constant turnover. Now we're seeing some stabilization with the roster, and I think at that point, and for the reasons that Bentley noted before, with not having that flow money coming in and a little extra motivation. Those two things combined, I can see them having a better 2018 than 2017.
Yeah, I'm really excited, honestly, about the promotion. And it's weird because we're not that far removed from me being super down on the promotion and kind of worried about where it was going and how I was going to just keep watching these shows every month. But now that they've left Flow and we see that they are going to bring in big talent, like – the fact that they're bringing in Daisuke Sekimoto and Will Ospreay to Mania Weekend is a big sign to me that they're going to keep pumping money into talent in this promotion. I know those are just one-off things, but they can't be, especially Sekimoto, can't be cheap flying him in for those shows. So I'm really heartened by 2018. The biggest thing I want to see is, like, I'm a huge Austin Theory fan now. I just want to continue to watch his ascension in this company. I'd really like to see Dickinson in a bigger spot, and I'll get to keep watching Zack Sabre Jr. So I'll enjoy that.
I wouldn't be so sure that Ospreay's a one-off. I mean, Sekimoto, really? Obviously.
Go on.
He obviously wouldn't be able to do these shows if he wasn't done with ROH. And it was pretty clear that he finished up with ROH. Over the last couple of weeks, you basically forgot he was with Ring of Honor. I mean, they barely used the guy. They finished him up, and why wouldn't Gabe try to secure more dates than just Mania Weekend? You know, I don't know anything. I don't know that he has, but why wouldn't you try? there's no reason not to if the guy is a free agent and at your disposal. I mean, there's no reason not to book a guy like that if it works for both sides. So, yeah, I'm not convinced that that's just a one-off. I don't see him going back to Ring of Honor. They didn't use him well, and he's the kind of guy where if he's not used well, he kind of loses focus and loses motivation. And, you know, if you lock that, if you present a guy like that with a plan and a push and not even necessarily win. I mean, he's a very unselfish wrestler. I mean, he loses everywhere he goes. You know, he never beats Skrull anywhere. And he did a losing streak gimmick in Progress. And he loses most of his big matches. But as long as he's doing something important, he's motivated and he tries hard. So, I would not be shocked if that's more than just a one-off.
That would be great. I thought that him to evolve, I was thinking about it earlier today. And I was just thinking, I was like, yeah, this is a great fit. Because I feel like last year it was like sort of easy to get kind of like Ospreay fatigue. Cause he had an incredible year, but he was just everywhere. And then it was like, this year his star kind of waned. Like, it's going to be good for him.
Yeah, well, that's because Ring of Honor had him locked up, and they basically had him under lock and key and mothballs. Yeah.
So absolutely. Yeah. No, I'm not saying it's his fault. I'm just saying that, like, that happened, you know? And so it's like, this is going to be a good stage for him. You know, I know he had the stuff in New Japan, but even they didn't, as you've mentioned once or twice on the flagship, that they didn't really use him to his full potential. And, I think this is like a nice, like, refresher for him, for the domestic audience to be like, oh yeah, Will Ospreay, he's really fucking good. So I think he can go out and have a big weekend, and it's big for Evolve's got some top talent coming in this weekend between Sekimoto and Ospreay and Walter and Keith Lee and Riddle. I mean, they're going to have a lot of guys. So I'm fired up
and don't underestimate too, that his New Japan contract is coming due in a couple of months. Now I have no idea if he tells people he's happy, and I have no idea if he plans on leaving or not. But I mean, if you know, Ring of Honor is obviously a close partner of New Japan. So, you know, if he's walking away from Ring of Honor, it wouldn't shock me if he also walked away from New Japan. And then all of a sudden he's got all kinds of dates opened up.
But don't you think if he leaves those places, don't you think the only place for him to go is WWE? Like, would he just like hang around and work like,
but that's the thing.
Evolve.
I mean, if you believe what he says, he's still not interested in going there, and he really wants to commit himself to Australia this year as well.
All right.
So if that's the case, my gut tells me he stays with New Japan, does his Australia thing, and his North American stuff is wide open. So if his North American stuff is wide open, why the hell wouldn't Gabe get as many dates on him as he can?
For sure. And also, while you're here – what's the word on the street about Walter? Is this a guy, the three guys, Walter, DJZ, and AR Fox, are these guys going to be like regular Evolve wrestlers, or are they going to be leaving soon?
I have no idea. All I know, what I've heard about Walter is, obviously his, tag team partner, Axel Dieter, went to WWE, but Walter is another one of these guys who just isn't interested in that, at least right now. So then it just comes down to a matter of cost. Do you want to keep flying him over here, and does it become, worth the cost to fly him over here? He's obviously the hot name right now. This is the time you want to book him. But then after that, after the first couple of shots, is it worth the investment? Are you going to get return on investment? That's only a question Gabe can answer, but he will be available. DJZ is a guy. Look, Gabe keeps his ear to the ground. That's one thing he's very good at. And before he went down with this injury, DJZ was arguably the hottest independent wrestler. I mean, he was having a hellacious year. AAW, other places. He'd be crazy not to get as many dates as he could on DJZ. And it seemed like it was trending that way. So he's not going to be out forever. You know, he'll come back from this injury. And that's definitely a guy. Who was the third one you mentioned?
AR Fox.
Yeah, again, there's some history there. Fox famously quit because he didn't want to pay tolls. But I mean, it's like Gabe has mended fences with people before. You know, he booked Low-Key after he said he'd never book him again. He booked Teddy Hart after he said he would never book him again. He booked Davey Richards when he said he would never book him again. So, I mean, there's precedent there in terms of mending fences, which – another plug, again, in the profile I wrote for Fighting Spirit Magazine, that's another big theme that I hit on, with Gabe, how he is willing to mend fences when it comes to doing business. So, yeah, I mean, the Walter thing, I just don't think it's cost – you know, there's it's a cost prohibitive thing, but with the other two, yeah, obviously. And A.R. Fox, he's another guy who kind of feels fresh because he hasn't been working the higher profile indies in recent years as much as he was in the past.
You know, as good as Gabe is at mending fences, I mean, he did retweet me a few weeks ago, so I don't know if he wants to, you know.
I can tell you, even on a personal level, that guy's been mad at me and Rich 1,000 fucking times. And that it's just the way, you know, it's like he's a fiery guy. Gabe wears it on his sleeve, you know, and I can promise you that he doesn't hate you guys. In fact, I'll tell you what, I can promise you that firsthand that he doesn't hate you guys. How about that?
Wow. This is big news here on the Everything Evolves podcast. The King of Banter comes on and he's got brought some scoops with him. So thank you.
So that retweet wasn't accidental.
Oh, well.
All right.
That's really fills my heart with joy.
I'd give it a little more time, honestly. I'd give it a little more time. But yes, that fence can be mended. He doesn't hate you guys. He does not.
Oh, well, that's good to hear. We were also going to talk about Mania Weekend, but we've talked about kind of everything surrounding that. The only thing, Aaron and I talked about this, and I want to get your opinion on this. My thought is that I am personally really psyched about Sekimoto working the Evolve Weekend because he's one of my favorite wrestlers, and I didn't think I'd ever get a chance to see him live. So I'm very excited. But I'm wondering how many tickets Sekimoto sells to Evolve shows. Like, how many people that go to Mania Weekend are into Sekimoto? He works at for a pretty small promotion. He's pretty popular within the Twitter bubble, but I don't know about on a bigger scale.
I think it's WrestleMania weekend. You go all out and you have to do things to stand out above because you're always going head to head with someone else. So I do think it's smart to bring in a guy like that. I remember in Dallas a couple of years ago, Gabe went with Kota Ibushi. I think without question, biggest crowds they ever had that year in Dallas. I think Kota Ibushi had a lot to do with that. I don't think Daisuke Sekimoto will have that kind of effect as a Kota Ibushi. Of course, Kota Ibushi had the advantage of being a New Japan guy and all those sorts of things. But I do think he moves the needle to some extent. I can tell you personally, I went from 90% going to New Orleans to 110% going to New Orleans when that guy's name got announced. I am not missing an opportunity to see that guy live. And I think there's probably a lot of people like me and a lot of people like Bentley who feel the same way. Look, this is might be my one shot to see Daisuke Sekimoto. And if that's the difference between buying an Evolve ticket and buying, you know, whatever, the ROH ticket that night or the whatever's running head-to-head with it, then, you know, it's those 100 tickets that can make the difference between breaking even on a weekend like that and losing a little bit of money. So, I'm not opposed to that at all. I think those are the kind of things you have to do because WrestleMania weekend is so competitive now. I mean, it's just crazy. It's almost overwhelming.
Yeah, I was kind of planning to let it play out with the Evolve cards to see what they were going to look like to decide whether to do those or the WrestleCon shows. But basically the minute they announced Sekimoto, I bought tickets to every Evolve show.
Yeah, and that kind of – that hammers home my point. I mean, we have two people right here on this call who – they just made money on, and you know, we're obviously not the only ones. So, I do think he can draw at least at that, you know, at that level.
All right. I guess AT took his L earlier in the show. I will take my L on my previous Sekimoto take.
Although that one, like I had to take the L cause Joe had facts that we didn't have access to. This is just to speculate. I think it's important to keep ourselves honest. We can't just take Joe's commentary is the word of God, even though he does agree with me and I'm inclined to believe that I'm right. You know,
hold on now. What is this now that Sekimoto will draw?
Yeah, that was what Aaron was arguing with. Whether
I mean, look,
I thought he would be.
I don't think he's selling 1,000 tickets.
Right.
But I mean, you know, I do think at what they're trying to accomplish with them, they will. And then here's the other thing too. Things like that are just it's good to book guys like that now and then. I actually, you know, when I was doing Hall of Fame research, because Kota Ibushi was on the ballot this year, I actually reached out to Gabe and I asked him. I said, hey, when you booked them for Ring of Honor in 2007, when you booked them for Evolve 1 or whatever it was, did he move the needle? And, you know, he said, no, he did not. He goes, those shows drew exactly what they would have drawn before. But the thing about it is, having a Kota Ibushi on those shows, it established Evolve as, holy shit, they're going to book big names. These are going to be big shows. This has a big main event. It got some buzz. Maybe it sold some DVDs, you know. So bringing in a guy like Sekimoto, it's a headline grabber, you know, and it's an attention grabber. And it's – you know, I talked before about running ECW Arena was kind of a loss leader for Heyman. Sometimes it's a loss leader to book guys like this just to show that your promotion is big time on the scene. So there's value in that too, I think.
Yeah, especially coming out of Flow Slam.
Yeah.
Very important here.
Having Ospreay and Sekimoto's and Walter on the same WrestleMania weekend is a nice way of, you know, planting your flag in the ground, sending your sort of the signal out to people who may have been frustrated by the Flow Slam ordeal that, hey, we're back, we're spending money, we're a big-time promotion.
Especially when word leaked that they were going to downsize the roster and use cheaper talent.
Right.
You know, so that's a nice way to sort of edge that off.
All right, well, I think we have covered the year in Evolve pretty well. Joe, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about the new Voices of Wrestling Patreon, and I'm going to open the floor to you at this point to tell us about it.
Yeah, so I've kind of been resistant to doing this for many years, and I know that Rich was kind of more into this than I was, but I'm finally on board, and we rolled out a Voice of Wrestling flagship podcast Patreon page. The one thing that I have always insisted upon, and Rich too, to be fair, is we didn't want this to be the sort of Patreon where it's just us sticking our hands out. I'm not a handout kind of guy. I'm old school. I like working for my money. I'm not going to What do they call it, guys? Grifting on the internet? I'm not a big fan of that. You know what I mean? If we're going to take money from people, I want to work for it. So we've got two different subscription levels, and we are calling them subscriptions, not donations. You are not donating to us. You are subscribing to us. At either level you come in on, either the $2 level or the $5 level, you are paying for actual content. There is no thank you level. There is no bumper sticker level. None of that bullshit. Okay, these are two different subscription tiers where you will be getting content. The $2 tier is it's a new show called The Overrun. We always run out of time on the flagship because I'm a bloviating idiot who doesn't want to shut up. And, you know, we don't get to all our topics. And that happens all the time. So now when we hit our 3-hour limit, we have this will be sort of a flagship extension where we get to talk about all the topics that we didn't have time to get to in our excruciatingly long 3-hour format. So if you jump in at the $2 level, you have access to the Overrun flagship extension. We guarantee at least one per month. There will never be less than one per month, and you will get the Overrun podcast. At the $5 level, that's where shit gets serious. That's where we're going to be rolling out all sorts of things that we just simply never had time to do in our 3-hour free format. And I do want to stress the weekly 3-hour flagship podcast will remain free, sponsor, and ad supported. That's never going to change. What you're paying for here is bonus content with both of these subscriptions. So the $5 tier, it's basically whatever we can think of. Some of the ideas we've thought of are potentially instant reaction, major show reviews right after they end, entire shows devoted to our mailbags, which are always off limits. So we'll, you know, do a full hour, 2-hour show that's strictly mailbag. We'll do themed reviews like the Starcade 91 that we've been promising for 5 years and never delivering on. We'll bring back some of the bits that we've done on the flagship that we don't have time to do anymore, like Joe and Rich recommend matches to each other and just do shows totally devoted to that. We haven't done interviews in 3 or 4 years, so you may see interviews at that tier, special guests, retro uploads of shows that were pre-Audio Boom that you can't find on the Audio Boom archive, which will probably get us in trouble because I'm sure I was very problematic in those days. We've got off-topic content. Rich's Squashing Buttons is coming back. Lanza Unfiltered is coming back. The greatest 3-episode podcast in the history of podcasting, which Bentley was a guest on. and did a tremendous job and got rave reviews, and he'll probably be a guest again. But Lanza Unfiltered is coming back, and it'll be behind a paywall. So imagine what that's going to be like. It was obscene to begin with, but now it's going to be behind a paywall. And then, you know, whatever else we could think of. We got a million different ideas. We know some things we're going to do, but we're just not telling people yet. What we want to do is under-promise and over-deliver. That's the key. We want to make sure we over-deliver. You go to www.patreon.com/voicesofwrestling to find our page. $2 or $5, very affordable. And for all the people who have always wanted more flagship, and the response has been great so far, now you have your chance.
I got to say, I'm really excited about the response that you guys have gotten already. It's I don't know what I expected from an outsider's view of how many people would sign up, but I'm excited that a lot of people have, and you guys are going to get rewarded for all the work you've been doing. I'm pumped about it.
Yeah, thank you. I hope so. So we'll see what happens. We've been excited about the response too. You know, we've got a number in mind that we thought we would eventually hit. We know that, you know, once we start rolling out content, we expect to see another little bump. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. It's and that's the other thing. We're not selling people that we need this money. The show can't continue if we don't get this money. Or our pets are going to starve to death if we don't get this money. No, we're gainfully employed. We're fine. This is just this is a subscription to extra content. That's what this is, and hopefully we deliver.
Well, I have not signed up yet, but I feel confident that I will, so that I can get all the Rich and Joe that I need in my life. I was a guest on Lands Unfiltered, and I had a great time. I hope I can come back. And I always enjoy you guys. I know that Joe and I disagree a lot, and we give each other a lot of shit, but I always enjoy chatting with you and getting your take on things.
You know, I think we agree more than people think, too. You know,
I agree with that.
Yeah, play up the gimmick a little, you know. But sure. I don't think I'm the monster that a lot of people think I am. But yeah, so but I have no problem portraying that monster. That's fine.
Yeah, man. Thanks for coming on and being a good sport about taking the communist loyalty oath. I talked to some folks at the DSA just now. We're going to send you your card. It'll be in the mail sometime next week.
Listen, the next time I'm in Jersey, I will try to come to a meeting with you.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Oh man, that's some premium content. That's a third. That's a $10 a month tier.
I'm not opposed to that. You know, you guys know I'm an open-minded guy. You know, I listen to you. I may tell you you're nuts when you're done talking to me, but I listen. You know, and I ask you and I bounce stuff off of you guys all the time because, you know, I like you guys. I think we're pals and I like getting these wacky pinko perspectives, you know. So the next time I'm in Jersey, if I could carve out a half a day to take a train into the city, I will come to a meeting with you and sit there and listen politely. And then, you know, I'll go banter with you later in a diner or something.
Yeah, sounds good. You're on. I would love that.
This is amazing. All right, Joe, thanks so much for coming on. Before we get out of here, I just want to remind everyone that we are on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network, of course, which you can find at voicesofwrestling.com or on the podcast app of your choice. You can also subscribe just to the Everything Evolves feed on iTunes. We would love if you would subscribe, rate, and review all the above. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at EvolvePod. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Aaron Taub is at AP Taub. We will be back in just a couple of short weeks to talk about the next batch of Evolve shows in January. And I guess that's it. Joe, do you have anything else you need to add to plug before we get out of here?
At Voices Wrestling. Do not follow my shoot account. You're wasting your time.
Well, unless you're like really into college basketball.
If you're into college, look, if you're really into college basketball and Joey Votto, then yes, at Joanne Lanza. Go right ahead.
All right. Thanks, Joe. For Aaron, I'm Aaron. We'll see you next time.
Happy New Year.